The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9.
Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you.
Listeners to this radio show should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the mutual fund, variable annuity, and variable annuity subaccounts. To obtain a prospectus, you may contact Friedman Financial or your financial advisor. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making a potential investment.
And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hope you're all doing well this morning. It is February 9th. And I have just returned after 3 full days at North Andover High School watching my kids perform in Footloose. I know I've been talking to you about it for the past couple days. North Andover High School did a great performance of the show, and I hope you had a chance to see it. Perhaps you were sitting in the audience somewhere out there. But we move on, and it is now leading us into Valentine's Day weekend. And joining me in studio today is my business partner, Marion Gilman. Marion.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Thanks
so
for being here.
So it was a successful run in North Andover?
It was a successful run. Congratulations
awesome.
To my son, Noah. He had the lead in the show. He played
he's awesome.
Ren McCormick, which was the Kevin Bacon role, as you may remember, back in the 1980s.
And he's the next Kevin Bacon.
Well, I don't know. But the kids all thought it was kind of weird when they were talked to dress, you know, from, you know, period of time in the 80s, right? And they say, why are people wearing 2 polo shirts? Why? Remember when we used to wear the 2 different colored polo shirts? One with the collar up, one with the collar down. You'd roll up your sleeves like a... Who does that? That was the most ridiculous thing ever. And of course, they had to work in all the big hair because we had plenty of that in the 80s as well.
Yeah, I remember that very well.
Yeah,
yes.
So it was a lot of fun. I mean, Footloose is one of those shows that has great music. Everybody knows the soundtrack. It's a lot of fun.
Great.
So congratulations to all of them. And here we are. Another week has gone by, and you don't have the coronavirus, right?
Oh, thank God, no. How about you? You good?
As far as I'm concerned, I still have this nasty cough that won't go away, but I don't believe it is the coronavirus.
Have you been to China lately?
Well, someone asked me that. I was in Hong Kong about 7 years ago, so...
I don't think that counts.
I don't think so either. So
we could quarantine you if not, right?
Yeah, but it is amazing how we have watched the stock market, not this past week, but the week prior especially, as there were stories about this virus spreading and where it's impacting different parts of the country, and how the stock market reacts to news that is uncertain.
Right. And, you know, I think everybody heard coronavirus, and there were a few deaths already. So very concerned about what could happen. And is this going to be another SARS epidemic? And, you know, everyone was so concerned. And, of course, it's turning out to be much less of an issue, I believe. The stock market recovered during this week. Particularly on Monday, you saw, and Tuesday, you saw a big response upward. That maybe the fears were overblown on Friday when that market had
gone down. Market dropped almost 600 plus points on Friday.
Right. Yeah.
In the Dow.
And
I think it's interesting when people say, "Oh my God, it dropped 600 points." Well. Is
600
points a big deal?
Yeah, no, not anymore. You know, it's very funny. Not funny, but when you're at Dow 24,000 versus Dow 14,000, big difference in 700-800 points. You know,
yeah,
on a percentage basis. You know,
and we're more like at Dow 28,000 or 29,000. You're still 6 months ago or
That's
something.
That's exactly Marion. Right. Yeah.
So I mean, the market has really moved, and we talked about last week the difference between dollars and percents.
Right.
And I mean, that's one of those big things when you say, oh my goodness, I lost $2,000. Well, if you had $3,000 and you lost $2,000, you lost a lot of money. It's, you know, 65 or 67% of your money. But if you lost $2,000 on a $200,000 portfolio, That's 1%.
Not so much. Yeah, exactly. That's very normal.
Yeah, you have to put all that stuff into perspective. And 600 points on 28,000 is not a big deal.
It's to be expected.
Right. And
you know, the markets go up, the markets go down. We've seen enormous gains in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to expect that that's most likely not going to continue. The market doesn't go straight up ever. This time could be different, but I doubt it. So we're going to see some volatility. And, you know, there are a lot of uncertainties. The underlying economy is good, and we want to focus on that. However, there are a lot of uncertainties that, and the news drives sentiment. So that news affects investors, and they respond quickly.
Yeah, and they do. I mean, even this coronavirus. I mean, you hear news of it, and people react to sound bites without having all the information.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that came in my mail, in one of my social media sites or whatever, someone had sent. She's a nurse that compared the myths about the coronavirus to facts about the coronavirus, and I thought it might be kind of fun to share some of those myths versus facts. So here is the myth about, here's one myth about the coronavirus. It says the coronavirus is the most dangerous virus that exists.
I don't think so.
Well, here's the fact. The common flu kills 60 times more people annually than the coronavirus.
I think we all forget that.
Yeah. I mean.
And you know, when people get the flu is a very common occurrence. So a lot of people get the flu. And the deaths that you hear are typically people who are, you know, highly susceptible, such as older people or people who have compromised immune systems or very young people. Those are the ones that you typically see die from something like that.
And think about where these viruses start. Look, whether it's corona or SARS or AIDS or wherever some of those issues might have been, they have been started in some of the most underdeveloped parts of this world, where sanitation is poor, eating habits are terrible, living conditions are awful. It's easy to pick up a virus.
Sure. And I mean, particularly, you know, when you think of China, the population is enormous, and particularly in some of the cities where it's very congested. So it can spread very quickly in those types of conditions.
And I think it's fascinating when we talk with some of our clients and even just folks here in the general public, how few people have really had the opportunity to experience life outside of our little bubble, which might be, for some, New England. Others, it might be the United States. But the United States is really the East Coast and the West Coast. They fly over all those big squares and circles in the middle of the country, but don't necessarily stop there. And maybe flying outside of the country means a trip to the Caribbean. And when you go to places like India or go to China or even go to Europe, you'll see different types of cultures, won't you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. We went to England last year, and in the last spring, 2019. And all this talk about Brexit, and, you know, people get all worked up, and how is this going to affect the stock market? Is my portfolio safe? Should we still keep money in the UK? And we did a tour with this local person, and so we said to her, you know, what's going on with Brexit? You know, she happened to live on the coast, the southern coast of England, and she said, you know what? We've had you know, agreements with all of these countries for years. We've traded for years. In reality, that's not going to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, Brexit or not, sure, maybe it will be how we do things might be slightly different. But you know what? Our world's not going to end. And she took a very, you know, reasonable approach. And when you walked around England, nobody was worried about the Brexit. Yeah, no. About Brexit, you know, it was not, oh my God, you know, where the England is going to, or London is going to just collapse. That wasn't the case at all.
No, I mean, these are still well-developed countries.
Exactly.
That have systems and regulations in place. It's not getting
destroyed.
And
certainly people were out, they were spending money, they were in restaurants, they were shopping. I mean, it was life as usual.
Yeah, so we've been talking.
Sorry.
No, this is great.
We're off track of the coronavirus, but you know, all the stock market things that people think, oh, this is going to really affect the stock market.
Right. The coronavirus thing is still a point of topic for some folks, but as we're talking about some of these myths and facts, I want to read you the second one that I thought was rather interesting. Here's the myth about the coronavirus. I will die if I'm diagnosed with the coronavirus. It's out. I mean, that's what people are saying. I mean, because people are walking around, oh my God, I will die if I get the coronavirus. People saw that there was a case of the coronavirus here in Massachusetts. there's been some in different parts of the country.
Well, it's interesting. The case in Massachusetts, as far as I've heard, he wasn't even hospitalized. He wasn't that
sick. No, he's treated. That's all.
Right, exactly. He is staying. He was a student, but lived off campus. So he is confined to his home. He's not going out and about. However, he's not sick enough to be in a hospital.
Right. In fact, the facts of this, who's dying of this coronavirus, only 2% of all of the cases that have reported deaths, and most of those deaths were associated with people with weaker immune systems.
Yeah, just what you'd expect.
And right. So, I mean, we catch a cold. You'll have the flu.
Right.
You'll get a virus. You may even be contagious. You don't want to start passing around an illness that's contagious, but we can be taken care of. It's not killing us. Right? I mean,
that's so from what I've heard, that is absolutely the truth.
And you would think that if it was it was a major concern, if it was a worldwide epidemic, though that's the words that you're seeing across social media.
It might be in China.
But is it impacting the stock market?
You know, I think the only place it's impacting the stock market is in China because
right.
There's a lot of confinement, I think, to your homes in China so that a lot of shopping isn't happening or activity.
Right. And I also think things like production.
But that will change.
Yes, of course. You know? I mean, production for exports and stuff that's going on in China, these factories have shut down for precautionary reasons.
Some of them, yeah.
And so it slows up the delay of delivery of items. And so
yeah.
that could change what people's earnings outlooks might be.
For a quarter, though.
Right.
And it's the first quarter of the year.
And it's likely to also impact the travel community and the tourism community to China.
Yeah.
That's going to be impacted. But how does that impact us? How does that impact our portfolio? Probably a minor issue. So lots of issues to talk about today. We had the president deliver a State of the Union address this past week, and there's been mixed response to that. Certainly the market hasn't had a problem with it, but others have their thoughts. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about politics. We'll talk about the investments. We'll talk about the coronavirus and so much more. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Planning for retirement and managing your investments has never been more difficult. Chances are you're trying, but worried you may make a misstep. Friedman Financial is all about getting your financial house in order and providing financial advice in a language you can understand. Their interactive software and in-person conversations will help you determine if you're on track. For more than 50 years, Friedman Financial has delivered independent advice. If now's the time to get serious about life and retirement, visit Friedman, 2 E's and a D, financial.com.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above Alto Forno Restaurant. If now is the time for you to get serious about your financial planning and your retirement planning needs, give us a call. We are ready to schedule a free initial consultation for you at our office. We have been really blessed and pleased with the number of listeners that have joined us and reached out and scheduled appointments. We've met so many of you. And I will tell you, sometimes when we chat on the phone and sometimes when we meet in person, we find that we're probably not a good fit for you, but we will give you some direction, some ideas on how you can try to put yourself in the direction that you need to go in. We can't simply take everybody as a client. And joining me today in studio is my business partner, Marion Gilman. And you meet many of these people as well, Marion, don't you?
I do, yes. And, you know, we want to be sure that you're going to get value from associating with us. And if we don't feel like we can give you that value, then certainly we will point you in a different direction.
Yeah, one of the things that we have learned at Friedman Financial is we're not about trying to wave the flag to say that we have more clients than anybody else. That is not what we're about.
Nope. And, you know, the young people who are just starting out and trying to save money, they're probably not the best fit for our office because our typical client tends to be a little bit older, closer to retirement or in retirement. Those are the people we can really provide value to.
Yeah. I mean, those that are realizing at some point their paycheck is going to stop.
Yep.
And they have to rely on the resources that they've collected and the other potential sources of income that are going to come their way.
Right, yeah.
And Marion and I were just talking, actually, this past week at the office, and I said, you know, when someone says they have $1 million, someone says, is $1 million a lot of money? And people think, oh, $1 million, of course it's a lot of money. And, you know, what could it grow to? In our office, for the most part, we think of $1 million is what kind of an income could it provide to our clients, not about how do we take that $1 million and turn it into $2 million. Because most of the clients that are coming to our office are saying, I have this amount of money. The stock market is sitting at an all-time high. How do I manage what I've accumulated? Figure out a way to draw income consistently from this portfolio and still have money to last for the rest of my life.
Yeah, not be wiped out if we have a real downturn in the market, a 50%, not a 1% or 2%.
Right. And what's really interesting is when the market did drop last Friday, not this past Friday, but the Friday prior with this coronavirus issue, and the market dropped another 600 plus points on the Dow, it was interesting to see who would call our office. And it wasn't our clients who are in retirement or taking money from their portfolio. It was clients who are adding money to their portfolio, building wealth. So the younger clients that are saying, oh my God, should I do something different? Do I need to get out?
Which is exactly the opposite of what you should be doing at that point in time.
You know, our clients who are mature, who have been through market cycles, are knowing, wow, this could be a great day to add, though it may not be. You never know. The market could drop even further.
Right.
But we're going to have down days.
And also, you know, you have to look at it. I mean, most people are not investing for a day, a week, a month. You're investing for 30 years. So one day down, one day up is not going to make or break you over 30 years. So you have to keep that in perspective as well.
Yeah, because 10 years from now, 5 years from now, you're not going to remember what the market was doing on the day you placed your investment with.
Most definitely not, right?
And I find it fascinating when we look now. Look, we've been doing this for 50 years, but some of our performance reports can go back to 2000. That's when our most recent performance reporting system was put in place. And we can really show clients through all of the 2000. That takes you through the market crash that we had in 2008 and 2009.
Well, at first, it was the tech bubble.
The tech bubble, too.
You know, that really deflated between 2000 and then 9/11. So between 2000 and 2002, we had a really terrible market.
And so when we can take a look to say, okay, how much money did you give us? How much money have you taken out of the portfolio?
Which is always a shocker.
Yeah. When people see that cumulative amount of money that they've taken out over the years.
No, where did I spend it?
I don't believe that that's right.
Right.
But it does add up. It's like, look, if you were to pull out your Social Security statement, your Social Security benefit statement that you get, and it lists your income over the past 20 or 30 years, you add up all of those annual incomes, and you've been paid well into the millions and millions of dollars when you add up all of that money. You go, oh, for some people, I should say. But it's a lot of money when you think about what it all is.
Where'd that all go, right?
Right. How did I spend all that? Well, that's what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, just like anything else, when you go and you buy a house, let's say you pay $500,000 to purchase a house, you get a $250,000 mortgage and you figure out you're going to pay your mortgage payments every month for 30 years. But if you really add it up, what you're paying over 30 years, it's far more than $250,000. In fact, it could be closer to 2 and 3 times the amount that you actually borrowed.
All that interest.
It really does add up.
It really does.
So the point of trying to save money, and many people are asking us this now, is they're saying, a younger couple that might come in, they're saying, you know, I've got all this money that I've accumulated. I've built money up in my 401k plan. I'm able to save additional money. And maybe I have some excess dollars in the bank, and I see the market's doing well, but I want to buy a house in a couple of years. What do you do with this money? Should I be investing this money?
Absolutely not. And that's what we tell them.
That's not what people want to hear, though, is it?
Exactly. You know, and last year that wasn't, you know, it looked like right now. I mean, had you invested last year, would have been a great opportunity. You know, you would have made money, but it could have easily gone the opposite direction.
Absolutely.
And you just never know. So if it's money you absolutely need in the next year or two, it should not be invested in stocks.
But what if the bank's only paying like a 0.5% or no percent, Marion?
You know what? Suck it up, I guess. I don't really know
She's
what to say
tough
about
on
that.
The radio.
Well, no.
It's true, though.
You got to say, it's up to you. I mean, it's up to the person. Are you willing to say, what if the market went down 30%. So your 100,000 became 70,000 when you needed 90.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do now?
Right.
So that's the chance you take if you invested in the market, because at any point that could happen.
Absolutely.
And if you think you know when to get out, that usually doesn't happen.
And I think it's kind of interesting because many people are now also going to be looking at their year-end statements. They've probably shown up in the mail. They've seen how good they did last year. And if you have a 401k, which many people do, a 401k or a 403b, you get this report. that shows, well, here's how you did, but here's how some of the here's the performance of all what all of the funds in the portfolio could have done had you invested in them. And I think one of the big mistakes we're seeing is people racing after the fund that performed really well last year.
Oh, that always happens, right? You know, and you should never do that. And we usually tell people in our office too that it's unlikely in your portfolio that you're going to hold the number one fund. However, nor are you going to hold the bottom of the list, mm-hmm. the last fund on the list, because we're not looking for the hot topic. We're not looking for the fund that actually shoots the lights out in one year and then fizzles out the following year. We're looking for something that's much more steady.
And we're usually looking at more than one fund, right?
Oh, most definitely, yeah. Yes. But.
So I had somebody in the office this past week, and she worked really hard to put money aside. In fact, she's been really good about putting money into her 401k for almost 15 years now. And she had built it up, and she said, oh, my 401k is doing awesome. And she had all of her money in one mutual fund. She picked this fund. She says, well, but it's diversified. I read about it. It's got like 200 different stocks in it. It's really, really diversified. And, well, she was buying a stock, a mutual fund that's designed to mirror the S&P 500. And like I said, you're going to do really well. I said, but when that market dropped on Friday, you lost 2 or 3% of the value. She says, I did. Now, she isn't looking at it on a regular basis. Didn't
which is
know
a
that,
good thing.
Which, very good thing. But she hasn't had, because she's only been at this for 3 or 4 years of putting money aside, she hasn't had the opportunity to see her account value drop.
Right.
And we need to encourage people to make sure that when you're building your portfolio, that you're building a proper asset allocation.
You need to be diversified. It's not the number of stocks you own. It's the range of companies that you own. So you don't want to own stocks of companies that are all large companies that are growing fast. Yeah, sure. Certain years, those companies will do very well. But other years, small companies will do even better.
Mm-hmm.
Or international companies, foreign companies. So you want to have a range of large, small, foreign, mid-size companies that pay dividends, companies that grow fast. All of that is very important for diversification.
Yeah, I've got this report here in front of me that that was handed to us through LPL Financial that talks about the market barometer of what's happened over the past month. As we just, you know, we had a great 2019, and then January of 2020, markets started going up, and then there was some volatility, and we had the corona epidemic, or story. I don't know what to call it, an epidemic, but it was the corona story that hit. And in one day, actually in the one month, the month of January, if you owned large cap growth companies, on average, you were up 2%. If you owned large cap value companies, you were down 2%.
Sure. It's random.
Right. But if you owned what's called an S&P 500 or a blended type fund that had half growth and half value, you were basically flat.
Yep.
And that's how it worked.
Right.
But what I also think is interesting, though, on a year-to-date basis on for the month, you know, we've heard about some of these technology companies doing really, really well this year. But there are other areas that are doing quite poorly. And one of the sectors that is doing really poorly is the energy sector.
Yes. Yeah. Oil prices have gone down dramatically as well. Yeah.
But those that are conservative investors, they say, I want to own my oil companies. Why, Marion?
They get the dividend.
That's right. My dividend keeps coming
in. And you know
in.
What? It's not a bad thing. So if you can tolerate the volatile nature of oil stocks or energy stocks, you know, as long as you don't sell it when it's low, then you're all set.
Did you know that on a three-year average, over the past 3 years, your average rate of return on the energy sector is down 5%.
Really?
While,
I did not know
I'm just looking here. This is the report. While on average, if you had invested in information technology, which is the big one, you've been averaging over 27% over the past 3 years.
Well, if you look at some of the statistics, you'll see that like Apple, for instance, might have provided, you know, 30% of the growth of any of the NASDAQ, which is the 100 top 100 technology companies of that index. Apple might have been the one that provided most of that growth. Or Google, whatever year you're talking in. And let's look at Tesla.
Yeah,
I mean, these stocks have really...
That is some incredibly volatile.
Right. Stock. Some individual stocks have been incredibly volatile, which is why we never recommend individual stocks. could be great companies that could provide great growth for you, but we prefer to do it in the mix of a mutual fund.
Right, but also what ends up happening is when a particular sector, let's say information technology, does really well, it can have a significant over effect on the upside of an index.
Yes.
And there's a report here called The Guide to the Markets that I have in front of me that J.P. Morgan puts together. And it talks about the fact that information technology right now represents a 23% weighting in the S&P 500. So when information tech, and that is the largest weighting of any sector in the market. So when it's doing really well and it's the largest sector, you're going to get an extra boost on the return in the S&P 500.
Exactly. But when it's doing really poorly, you're going to get an extra decline.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. And the reason why most people don't realize that the utilities have been so, are down so much, because it really isn't playing that much of an impact in the S&P 500. It represents 3% of the overall S&P 500.
Right. So if you're looking at indexes, and that's the danger of looking at it, comparing your portfolio to an index, particularly if you own stocks or mutual funds in a particular category, like energy.
Right. And you can generally go to websites like Morningstar,
yep,
take a look at the mutual fund that you own and see, how does my sector of categories align with what the S&P 500 is, or what,
right,
the category average might be.
Right.
And you can learn a lot from that. You can understand, why am I outperforming or why am I underperforming?
Right.
And for instance, if you are more heavily weighted in the technology space than is the S&P 500, but your fund isn't performing as well as the S&P 500, you might want to ask yourself,
Why?
Right? Has the portfolio manager picked the wrong technology stocks?
Sure.
That's a reason to get in or out, because...
Right. And not underperforming or, you know, outperforming for any particular day or week or month.
That's right. That's right. It's very,
very important to remember, yeah.
And, you know, what's also interesting to me is that years ago, people were talking about bonds and the fact that, you know, bonds have done really well over the past couple of years, where we had thought back then when we heard interest rates were going up. Past 1 year. But when we heard interest rates were going up, they actually didn't, right? And bonds performed far better than expected.
When interest rates went up, bonds...
Bonds went down.
Went down, right.
But interest rates did not go up this year.
In 2019, it turned around, correct?
Right.
So a lot of people thought interest rates were going to continue to go up, and were very nervous about bonds. That didn't happen, so bonds actually did quite well.
So bonds did something that we normally don't, you don't build into your planning, is they gave you more than just your interest payment.
Correct.
You got appreciation as well.
That's right. But in 2018, you know, you saw a big decline in bonds as well.
That's right.
So you have to be careful about that, because a lot of people do buy bonds and think it's never going to fluctuate, and they do fluctuate.
Yeah, and if interest rates start moving up,
yep,
and no one says they're moving up just right now.
No, we don't expect that, but, you know, they certainly could go up a little bit from here.
It's true. Lots of things to think about. You need
Absolutely.
To make sure that your portfolio is positioned appropriately, that you understand the risks that are exposed, and that your goals are aligned with your objectives.
Absolutely, and you're willing to take on the risk that you're actually taking.
Yeah,
that's the most important point.
Absolutely.
Some people are fine with it.
Yeah, it's important, though, that you tie that into the big picture,
right,
of your overall financial plan.
That's correct.
We've got to take a quick break. When we get back, I want to talk to you about this report that came out of Goldman Sachs. It tried to help understand why there is such polarization in Washington these days. It was a fascinating study that we looked at by the top public priorities by each party. And we're going to have a little conversation about that.
Fascinating thing.
Yeah, I think you'll be really interested.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Hanny's North Shore Music Theater is turning 65 and celebrating with another extraordinary season of musicals. The 2020 subscription season kicks off in June with Thoroughly Modern Millie. The high-octane, Tony-winning musical filled with flappers, tappers, and a roaring good time. Then get ready to be swept up in our magical family production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella.
It's possible.
This will be followed by Buddy, the Buddy Holly story. And the hysterical sci-fi camp classic, Little Shop of Horrors. The musical season will end with the Tony Award-winning feel-good musical, Kinky Boots. Become a five-show subscriber today and save up to 45%. The 2020 season will also feature the special springtime return of Mamma Mia. For discount subscription packages and ticket information, visit us online at nsmt.org.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and right above Alto Forno Restaurant. In studio today with me is my business partner, Marion Gilman. Marion, thanks for joining us.
Oh, great to be here, Mark.
It's always nice to have the banter going back and forth. It makes it far more enjoyable rather than me just screaming in a little closet here. I get to talk to you.
Yep. Just like in the office.
Just like in the office. It's right. We just talk about stuff, right?
There you go.
Well, you know, I want to bring people back. I promised you that I'd talk about some of these issues surrounding this coronavirus, some of the myths and facts. I thought it might be interesting to treat you with a couple more myths and facts about the coronavirus. Folks, we're not dying here. The planet is not disintegrating. This is not a mass expulsion of people here. It's not population minimization, none of that stuff.
Oh, thank God.
But one of the myths out there is, I need to buy a hazmat suit and an N95 mask to stay protected from the coronavirus.
Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I guess the Army-Navy store is really bulking up on all that stuff. Right. And there's a line out the door over at Jerry's, I guess. Is Jerry's still there? Jerry's Army-Navy? Still there on the corner in Salem?
Wow. Yeah, well, I think it is.
Well, here's the secret to surviving the coronavirus.
You know, I'm not sure hazmat suits would be tough to wear.
I think it would be a little tough.
Yeah. It's tough to move around.
It's certainly tough to type on your computer. How would you text?
I have no idea.
How would people text in a hazmat suit? You're going to have to get these special gloves, which like expose your thumbs and your fingerprints. But the solution to that is washing your hands and sneezing into your elbows. That's generally the best practice. Well, here's another one.
That's not too hard to do either.
I don't think so.
All good.
Here's another one. Here's a myth about the coronavirus. We all need to panic and blame China for this emergency.
Oh, yeah.
I should also make insensitive jokes about international students.
Well, I do understand that's happening, which is very sad.
Boston Public Schools had to come out with a press release and a messaging that people are making inappropriate statements to Chinese and Asian students out of fear that, oh, they must be carrying the coronavirus.
That's crazy.
That's so ridiculous.
Sad that happens.
Yeah. And here's the last one.
Poor kids.
Here's another myth. I should believe everything I read online about the coronavirus.
We believe everything.
Because it's all factually checked and written without any bias.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. And we know what the facts are there. Look, you can't. Can you trust anything that you read over the internet these days?
I don't know.
I think you just have to be a discerning reader about everything. But talk about something that is infected. Washington. Yeah, certainly the state of Washington, not the state of Washington. I would be terrible if I said that because, by the way, Kansas City is in Missouri, not in Kansas. So when the big joke that was out there was when the president invites the chiefs to visit the White House, he needs to make sure he doesn't send a ticket to fly to Seattle. You get that? Because Washington is actually, never mind.
Get it.
All right. Well, but there is some.
So we're talking about Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. we're talking about.
The District of Columbia.
Yeah, there was.
Got it.
Marion and I were at this meeting run by Goldman Sachs, and they were trying to talk about this political polarization that exists in Washington today.
And how it happened.
Yeah. I mean, it's really fascinating that what they did was they looked at three different periods of time when there was a president in office. They looked at 1999, 2009, and 2019, so 10-year increments. And they looked at what were the topics, the most important topics topics for each of the political parties. And
it had nothing to do with who was the president or who was the party in power in either of the House of Representatives or the Senate. It was really just what the prime topics were for each party and how they prioritized them.
Aaron, we've seen over the past 5 or 6 years, I mean, the most unfavorable brand in America is Congress, not Not anything else. I mean, people. It's hard. I mean, people just don't respect, don't trust anything about Congress. But there was a time when both sides had differences of opinion, yet they were still able to move forward and solve some problems. So, Marion, perhaps we can talk about the fact that in 1999, Democrats and Republicans shared four common traits. What were the four common topics that were important?
So what were the things that they were both willing to prioritize and get done as they're working in Congress? And the four things that they had in common were education. That was the number one goal, number one
they
priority.
Shared that, both the House.
That's exactly right.
Republicans
both of
and
them.
Democrats.
Yep, they both shared Social Security, and that came in at number three for both of them. Healthcare was also a priority. The Democrats ranked it as the second priority, Republicans the fifth, but still.
It was in the top five.
Top five. And then crime, which Republicans ranked as number two, and Democrats as number four. Four things that they all prioritized. So they had a lot in common.
Right. So if they wanted to move forward to try to push initiatives through, they could get a lot done, because when they focused on four, there was four things that they could work on.
Yeah. That they both believed in, and they were willing to compromise to get something done because they knew it had to be done.
Right. How about in 2009, 10 years later?
Yeah, 2009, three in common. So still not bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not as good as it was. So the number two priority for both Republicans and Democrats was the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Republicans, was terrorism. That was number three for Democrats. And number one for Democrats was jobs, and that was number three for Republicans. So you had those three in common, though.
But you think about it, though.
Ranking, but
you
still.
You know, 2009, we were in a significant recession. We just had
Absolutely.
The credit crisis.
Yeah.
So jobs had to be a priority.
That's correct.
There was the issue of terrorism, of course, on the minds of both sides, and we needed to get the economy back in place. But what were the two things that they didn't agree on?
The two things they didn't agree on... Republicans prioritized the military and Social Security. The Democrats prioritized education and health care.
So those are the two other things that they had differences of opinions on, but they had three items that they were willing to work together to say, we can make some progress.
Yeah.
So now you fast forward to 2019. And what of the priorities that are out there, when you ask the Republicans and you ask the Democrats, what are the prioritized items that you think we need to work on in Congress? What's the problem here now, Marion?
None in common.
None of them align.
Not one of the top of the five.
And so the Republicans, they state their top five priorities are terrorism, the economy, Social Security, immigration, and the military. What do the Democrats say, Marion?
Democrats are health care, education, environment, Medicare, and poor and needy.
And so there's a difference.
Very different priorities.
And it's very hard to find commonalities when your priorities are so different. And that's the reason why there's such polarization right now. Just as much as the Democrats or the Republicans want to push an issue through, the Republicans, like anything else, in any business, if you work anywhere, whether you're in your own job, in your own family, you know that there's a lot of issues that are on the table, a lot of things you have to discuss. But in order to move forward, you have to find, okay, let's set some priorities. Where are our common, where's the common ground here? How can we move forward?
What can we agree on?
Yeah, and in 2019, there's nothing right now.
They can't even agree on what to address first, because clearly they're on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, and it's a challenge. And you know, just as the president gave his State of the Union address this past Tuesday night, I mean, he talked about a lot of things. Depending upon what your priorities are in your own head, you'd listen to the president speaking, you say, oh my God, this country is doing great, while others would think just the opposite. He's not talking about the right stuff. He's saying, making some positive statements, but he's not talking about the right stuff. And it's really gotten personal now, hasn't it?
Right, and which is sad.
That's what makes it so uncomfortable.
Right.
And, you know, we are still being watched by the rest of the world, and it's really unfortunate where we're at this point.
And we are in an election year this year, so it's going, you know, it's really at the forefront of everyone's mind. So this should be an interesting year.
Absolutely.
Quite honestly, and you know, a lot of people will ask us, how does this affect the stock market? And it's likely we'll see some volatility in the stock market, given, you know, what's going on with the Democrats. It's really uncertain as to who might take the lead.
Right.
You know, we've just had the Iowa caucuses, and, you know, we're moving on. So that's only just one, the first contest. So we have a lot more to go. As different candidates emerge, I'm sure we're going to see good and bad, and good and bad in the stock market too.
And the ugly too, probably.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
No,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, some of the candidates would be better for the stock market, quite honestly, you know, than others. So that's what you might see.
But if
the market responding to that, but of course we never know.
Right. And so you're listening to us. And so we're talking about the stock market and the economy being something that's important, we believe, to our clients' success. I mean, in order for them to
right.
continue to be able to create income from their investments, to create growth from their portfolios, to be able to provide goods and services to themselves, their families, their children, their parents, to be able to travel and do all the things they want to do, that's very, very, very much economically driven.
Sure.
So, you know, I know many of our clients are thinking, well, if we can move the economy along and keep that momentum going, that's positive for us.
Sure.
But everybody has different priorities. But I will say, people will say, well, what is the stock market telling us about the direction of this presidential outcome? What would you say, Mary?
Right now?
Yeah.
I think the stock market is leaning towards Trump being reelected, because that's, you know, that's just, the stock market has done well during his time in office, and I think that that's what they're looking at. Who knows, though?
No, I would agree with you.
We're very, really early in the year, and the stock market doesn't know what's going to go happen anyways.
No, but
you know, that's just, it's just a voting booth, I guess. But
right. But the yeah. stock market is generally a leading indicator of what they predict is going to happen. And just as they were a leading indicator a week ago Friday, when the coronavirus came in here and no one really
destroy
knew
everybody, right?
But the stock market had a gut reaction, so it pulled back.
Yeah.
Just as it will if, let's say, one of the candidates that is not pro-economy starts taking a more visible position on the Democratic ticket as we begin to move forward. The market is going to take a gut reaction, and it's going to pull back. Now, is it appropriate for it to pull back? Who knows? Because no one knows what the outcome is going to be. It's a leading indicator. And
it's
it can
only
change.
An indicator.
It's
right?
all it is. Yeah. It is not a guarantee.
Right.
It's not a means of panicking. Because, look, is the market going to pull back 10% in the near future, Marion?
I would bet.
I would bet it,
but
too.
But who knows, right?
We know it's going to pull back at some point, right?
Yes.
There's no question about it.
I would say with certainty at some point it will pull back.
And if we felt that the stock market was going to pull back, is it a time for people to get out of the market?
No.
Hmm. I would agree with you, but I think we need to be very clear in that statement, in that if we think the market's going to pull back, it does not mean you sell out.
Right. So, you know, we take a long-term approach, and we, you know, you don't sell out in a downturn. And we've lived through this several times, Mark and I. I mean, the Friedman Financial has been around a long time. Mark and I have not been there for the full 50 years, although we have longevity, 20 and 29.
Yeah, we've been there a while.
So it's a long time, but we lived through 2001, too. We lived through 2008 and 9. Individuals who sold out missed the upswing.
Yeah.
So you just don't want to react and say, I'm selling out. And even if it persists, people tend to sell out at the very bottom. That's when they can't stand it anymore. And just like people tend to get in at the very top of the stock market because now they're afraid they're missing out on something. So, you know, you have both ends, both extremes. And so you just don't want to react like that. Yeah. Don't let your emotions drive it.
So if your emotions are getting in your way and you're having a difficult time trying to wrap your overall personal financial situation around trying to get the proper answers to what you need in preparing for retirement, I hope you'll give us a call. Our phone number is 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or if you'd like to sign up for our free newsletter, it's called Planning Pointers. Comes out each and every Friday at 10:30 in the morning. We've been doing this for over 11 years now. Hard to believe. Tons and tons of issues. I mean, I mean, I guess we're up to almost 600 consecutive issues.
A lot.
Yeah, and we write it ourselves. We don't buy it from some other source.
Nope.
If you'd like to get that newsletter, go to my website, FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com. Go to the bottom of any page, put in your name, your email address, and you'll start getting our newsletter this upcoming Friday. We're going to take a quick break. We've got more to share with you when we're back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Just got paid. Friday night.
This is Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial with important information concerning your retirement. In a rare showing of bipartisanship, Congress signed the Secure Act into law. It revamps the rules around required minimum distributions from retirement accounts, and it changes the way non-spouse beneficiaries can inherit your retirement funds. If you've named a trust as your IRA's beneficiary, or if you're approaching retirement and planning to take a required minimum distribution, you may need to rethink your strategy. At Friedman Financial, we understand the new rules, and we're here to provide you with financial advice in a language you can understand. Give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. And schedule your free initial consultation.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above Alto Forno Restaurant, where we have been providing financial advice in a language you can understand since 1968. If now is the time for you to get serious about your financial planning and retirement needs, my business partner Marion and I would love to talk with you. Marion, thanks for joining us again today.
Great to be here, Mark.
It's segment number 4. You doing all right?
Unbelievable. Yeah, I made it through.
You did.
Oh, well, almost.
Yeah,
almost
you always do great. And it's a lot easier to banter back and forth with somebody than have to sit here and try to figure out what I'm going to talk about for a whole hour. So thanks for providing the comic relief,
I can give you a hard time every once in a while.
So, hey, I want to ask you, look, you meet with a lot of clients in our office, and I want to ask, you know, the market's been going up. Many people are approaching retirement, thinking about retirement. A lot of worries, a lot of stuff that goes on. People ask for money. What is there a common theme, or is there something that is really jumping out to you that it seems like a lot of clients are asking for these days or talking about? Anything in particular that you can think of?
In terms of, you know, what they want to do in retirement, or in terms of how they manage their money?
I think about when they think about taking money from their accounts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what are some of the surprises you're seeing?
Yeah, one of the issues is that we face a lot is that people get so accustomed to having money in their investment account and, you know, just calling us and getting money that they run out of of money at the bank. So we've always told people when they've come in to visit us, and one of the primary goals of any financial plan, initially you always want to have an emergency fund at the bank. It doesn't matter if it's paying no interest, makes no difference. If you're faced with a car repair or a new roof or whatever it might be, you need safe money in order to, you know, have right at the bank so that you can pay those bills. You can get a new car. You can, whatever it might be. We always tell people to have at least 3 to 6 months living expenses at the bank. Because you know what? The market's been great, yes. And you would have been better off keeping your money in the market last year than at the bank. But it can go the other way as well. And if you needed, you know, $20,000 and the market went down 20% last year or 25% last year, you're not going to be very happy having to sell your investments to get that $25,000
at
that time. Yeah, sure. Yeah, if it's gone up, great. But we faced this and we found out, we didn't realize, I have to admit, in 2008 and 2009 that people were doing this. So all of a sudden, we hit a big downturn in the market, and we realized, you know, when people call us to say, oh, well, I need a new roof, or I need money for a down payment on the car, I need $10,000, we'd say, well, you know, use it from your emergency fund. Oh, well, I don't have anything at the bank anymore. We didn't know that. So that was a real wake-up call for us. And we make sure people now keep an emergency fund at the bank. And if they don't have enough, when the markets, you know, when they come in to visit us or when they call us, we make sure we send them extra money so that they build that emergency fund
up sometimes, again. Sometimes that's a difficult thing for people to understand. But one of the things that we take great pride in, I mean, I'm not quite sure how you might work with your financial advisor if you listen to the show, if you have one, or how you handle it yourself, but we take great pride in working with our clients from the perspective of their overall net worth.
Yes.
So every time you come into the office, we're sending you a week or two in advance an update of the net worth statement that we have on record. Now, when you have money invested through the office, we can certainly provide you what those values are. But a year ago, you might have told us that you thought your house was worth $500,000 or that you had $30,000 sitting at the local bank. So we send you that net worth statement and we ask you, take a look, make some updates, let me know, or let us know what's still in the bank. And one of the things that we can tell is if you told me that you had $30,000 at Citizens Bank, and now this year you tell me that you have $2,000 at Citizens Bank, what that tells us is that you're spending more than what is coming into the house. If the bank account is growing or there's contributions that are being made to your 401k or your personal investment account, well, it tells me that you're spending less or you're still being able to manage within that cash flow. Those are very helpful indicators to us and we can give you proper guidance.
Right. And we don't care how much you spend. I mean, we don't want to be the ones that say, oh, you can't, you know, you can't do that. We don't care what how much you spend or what you spend it on. All we care about is if that our information is accurate so that we can guide you and say, okay, well, if you, you know, for some people, if you continue to spend, you'll be just fine in retirement. Other people, if you continue to spend at that level, you're going to run out of money. And you should just be aware of that. You don't want to come all, you know, you don't want to get to age 85 and have, look at your investment accounts and say, oh my God, you know, I lived it up way back and now guess what? I have no money left.
Yeah, I always find it interesting when we see some new folks and they come in and we talk to them. We ask, you know, how much do you think you'll need to spend in retirement or how much are you spending right now? And they'll think, go through a few numbers in their head and they'll say, oh, it's probably $4,000 or $5,000.
And I say, A month.
$4,000 or $5,000 a month. And I'm thinking, I think it's more than that. No, I don't think so. I said, wait a second. Between the two of you, you make $200,000. You have money in your 401k, but very little money in the bank. That would suggest to me that you're spending more than $4,000 or $5,000 because money isn't just getting burnt before it lands in your bank. It's going somewhere. I said, so let's think about what are some of the things that you spend money on? And they start telling me, well, you know, there's the mortgage that I have to pay. There's the cable. There's electric. Do you go out to eat? Well, yeah. How's that factor in? And then they say, well, I probably put, you know, a couple $1,000s on my credit card each month, but
that doesn't count.
But you mean that too? Well, yeah, that all counts. That all counts.
And I find that a lot of people miss the one-time expenses or the, for instance, if you pay quarterly taxes on your property, people forget that because it's not every month. It's only once a quarter. If you go travel, you know, go on vacation and you spend $10,000 a year on vacation, people forget that because it's not a monthly expense.
Another thing people do is they give money to their kids or their grandkids.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't count, right? Well, it's still money that's going out of the house. I mean, are you going to stop doing that? It's still part of the expense.
Right.
And so we've always tried to encourage our clients. In fact, when they work with us, we ask them to give us 6 months bank statements, sometimes 12. And we'll try to take an estimate of how much you're spending on average. And sometimes that number really, really surprises people. But what's also interesting is when people get their paycheck and they think, let's say you're making $100,000 a year and you figure, well, I'm paying federal tax, state tax, Social Security tax, all these things. And you figure that in retirement, maybe you're getting a check that's, I don't know, $6,000 a month if you're making $100,000 or $72,000 a year. And so you figure when I retire, I'm going to need to draw $100,000 out of my account because that's going to net me $72,000 a year or $6,000 a month. That's not the case, is it, Mary?
It's not. A lot of things go away that most people don't remember or think about.
Right.
First of all, Social Security tax goes away. You don't pay Social Security tax or Medicare tax.
Mm-hmm.
So that's eliminated. Many people are contributing to a 401k. That goes away.
Right.
There are other things that usually come out of your that might come also come out of your paycheck, such as commuting costs, or if you have additional insurance through your workplace, whatever, health insurance, sometimes you have to pay a premium for that. So all of that comes out. So it's a very different scenario. You know, you might only need $80,000 to net the same amount of money that you were getting when you worked.
And we do those exercises for you. Some people would say, well, doesn't an accountant do that? Well, an accountant will process your taxes and certainly help you organize those. But tax planning is a big part of what financial planning is all about.
Sure. And particularly with the change in tax laws, it's confused a lot of people. So, you know, you need some clarity on that, too.
Yeah. And another thing that we're finding, I talk about this a lot, and people go, no, that's not possible. And then I'll have someone come into the office, and I'll tell them exactly what I'm going to tell you on the radio. They say, I can't believe that this is true. Is we'll tell them that chances are in retirement, unless they're looking to leave an enormous amount of money to their children, they probably need to spend more than what they're spending right now. Is that not true?
That is very true.
Yeah, because they just don't realize
how much money they're going to have.
Yeah, so we're always surprised with the questions that are asked by our clients. I love the questions, and you should never be afraid to ask any question.
And there are no stupid questions.
There really aren't. I mean, even a plumber will tell me when I ask him stupid questions about my own toilet or the way the sink's working. You know, it's just, we don't do this every day.
It's a different language, too. You know, sometimes we forget that this is a different language. And, you know, we have to remind people this is what you're looking at. I know nothing about plumbing. I know nothing about other professions. So, you know, same thing. I always tell people, you know what? I couldn't do what you do either. So.
Right. You find your skill set.
That's exactly
you
right.
get good at it. And right. the way you get even better at it is by having a lot of experiences.
That's right.
And that's one of the things that you and I have plenty of.
Absolutely. You know, we learn from them. That's the most important piece of it, right?
Yeah. The best part of our job is that it's different every day, isn't it?
It really is. It's amazing. And it's fun. You know, that's what makes it really interesting and fun. We meet a lot of great people, and they all have different experiences to share.
Yeah, they all have a different story, too.
They do. They do. Love the stories.
Yeah, everyone's got a different relationship with their kids, with their parents, with their siblings, and
different approach to money.
Oh, absolutely. And we especially see that, Marion. And it's unfortunate, but we see this a lot, is when somebody dies.
Yes, and unfortunately, we have an older clientele, so it happens a lot.
Yeah, so the expectations that the surviving spouse has on how money will work in the future, we become one of the first calls that people make when somebody dies.
Right.
But when it's the second spouse, and now the money's being left to the children, we have basically a behind-the-curtains view on how each of the children look at the money they're about to inherit, and they all have different opinions on it, don't they?
They do, and they might not jive with what the parents expected. So you need to be prepared for that as well.
Yeah, you know? So you know, as a parent or as a grandparent, sometimes you have to think to yourself, do I want to manage from the grave, or do I want to let my kids fend it themselves?
We've seen all scenarios. It's very difficult to manage from the grave.
It is, but you have to honor those wishes sometimes too, and sometimes
most
they can't
definitely.
Be changed.
Sure, sure.
And I love the expression that a client of mine used years ago, and I've said it here on the radio many, many times. Perhaps you want to give with warm hands rather than cold ones.
It is a great expression. She's a great lady.
She really is. And I've said that to a lot of folks, and I am finding that people are realizing the amount of wealth that they're about to pass on to their children is far more than they ever received in their generations before. And maybe it might make sense to look at some experiences, to do some things a little bit differently, and plan for your future, not for the future that your parents thought they had or grandparents thought they had.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this evening. Oh, this morning, I should say. It's not this evening. It's still Sunday. Valentine's
Day. Rest in the day.
Yeah, I know. Valentine's Day is coming up on Friday. If you have not picked your location.
Made your reservation.
Yeah, so make them quickly. Everyone boost their price. I know that. My suggestion is go for Valentine's Day on Thursday or Saturday.
Perfect.
Stay away from the restaurants on Friday. That is financial advice in a language you can understand. And that's going to do it for us today. I'll see you again next week. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only. and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.